Welcome to the Store Builders Podcast, the place where we talk to industry experts and successful store owners about what it takes to build a thriving e-commerce business. Every episode, we deliver the raw, unfiltered recommendations that will catapult your store to new heights. Ready to get serious about expanding your e-commerce empire? Well, then let's get to work.
I'm your host, Ryan Cowden, and this week we're joined once again by Chris Lemma. In this episode of the Store Builders Podcast, Chris and I discuss why you should consider publishing some comparison posts on your online platform. If you're a store owner or store builder, chances are you know a lot about your content and your marketplace. But if you're prioritizing your store or your business and not regularly blogging or podcasting, chances are you aren't sharing that knowledge with your customers. Comparison posts are a great way to solve this problem. Generating a few comparison posts will allow you to educate your customers and demonstrate your expertise in the marketplace. Once you figure out the format, it's an intuitive way to both share and receive information. On this episode, you'll hear what a comparison post is. Online shoppers often do Google searches for product comparisons. It's how shoppers think when they've narrowed down their searching to a crucial decision point. By writing a post comparing the various features of two products, you can write a post your customers will find and easily relate to in their search process. Next, we'll talk about the elements to include in a comparison post. You'll hear the questions you need to consider, as well as the role visuals can play in such a post. Then we'll go over the time cost and level of difficulty involved in creating this content. While a simple comparison post may only take a few hours, as a store builder, it's wise to have some writers and graphic artists to recommend so they can generate a truly amazing product. After that, we'll share some tips on how to conduct product research. More often than not, store owners are sitting on a lot of knowledge with few opportunities to share it. Interviewing store owners and other collaborators can provide you with a lot of the content you'll need to create these posts. And finally, we'll offer some criteria for you to consider in comparison posts. The most important thing to remember is the intended use of the product and understanding the context in which it will be used. If you're looking for an engaging way to share more of what you know with your customers, then this is one episode you won't want to miss. There's a lot of actionable advice in this episode, so grab something to write with because you're going to want to take notes. As always, I'll be back on the other side to wrap up any loose ends. So without any further ado, here's my conversation with Chris Lemma.
Chris, welcome back. Great to see you again.
Good to see you, Ryan.
Thanks. So we're talking about comparisons today, and I think a good place to start would be to just talk about comparison posts. What is it? What are the basic features?
So if you are a store builder building websites for your customers, websites, you know, and setting up strategy and everything else for your merchant, one of the things that doesn't happen enough is that you're not talking with your customer about content. And that's because, you know, you're in the headspace of, I got to build a store and then get out. One of the things I find that sets some stores apart from others and allows them to thrive and do well, which of course is what you want as a store builder, is the ability to talk strategically about certain kinds of content that a merchant should focus on. And one of those kinds of content is a comparison post. If you think to your own life and you think about your own Google history, or if you just go and look it up, right, you will find that often you ask Google about A versus B. Should I get this or that, right? And when you ask Google that, you are essentially begging Google to help you distinguish or differentiate between one product and another. So if you were talking about blenders, and you were like, gosh, you know what? I'm trying to figure it out. And even if you feel like you've narrowed it down, right? And you're like, I feel like I'm pretty good and I gotta just decide, do I wanna get the NutriBullet, right? Or the Bullet, or do I wanna get the Vitamix, right? Vitamix or Bullet, which one, right? And so what do? You go to Google and you type in Vitamix versus Bullet, or Vitamix or Bullet, and Google will bring you up content. Now, if you're a merchant who sells one or both of those, that comparison content would be dramatically useful, right? Especially because people are already evaluating competitors in their head. A lot of times you hear stores that are like, hey, I don't want to talk about my competitors. I don't want to talk about my competitors at all. You're like, well, like I won't say their name. Like, it's a little silly. Your customers are saying their name all the time. Why don't you say their name and say it as yes? In fact, not just say it, but embrace it. Yes, they're a great product.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Every time I talk about a competitor, I'm going to say something like, oh, they're a great company. You know, they do this well and this well, right? I'll give you two things they do well. And then I'll turn around and go, of course, if you're trying to do this, this, or this, that's not really where I would be. Right? So yeah. Now you have a position and shift the focus back over to here's the other thing I would recommend. So comparison posts allow you to take two kinds of products, two SKUs, two whatever, and compare them, mm-hmm. right? Say, you know, here's what you should be thinking about. And as a store builder, we won't necessarily write the content, but having the conversation about what it is and how to do it, instructing our merchants, because they're not writers, but giving them a framework for how to do it will allow them to do it. And that will drive traffic to the site. And if it drives traffic to the site, because people are already doing that kind of searching, then they're going to see a lift in conversion from that, because A, they brought in a funnel of people that weren't normally going to show up to their site until they got to the end of the decision-making point where they decided, I want the Vitamix. Now I'm going to go to the website that sells it.
Yeah.
Better to grab them earlier in the process when they're still doing research, because if you're writing several of those articles and they keep coming back to you, now you're building that trust that allows that customer to make a purchase on your site.
Okay. Yeah, I love this from an SEO perspective of just having these comparisons out there. People find it, drives them to your site. Do you think people should try to make the sales pitch in the midst of the comparison piece? Is that a good idea or not?
I don't think you need to.
Okay.
I think what you want to do is you want, so I believe in a framework, right? I believe that there is a certain framework to how to write a good comparison post, right? And so that framework starts by, who is this for, right? Mm. If we're talking about blenders, which is the simple example I'm using right now, if we're talking about blenders, there's a difference between a in-your-home, on-your-kitchen-counter blender and a blender on the go, right? Mm-hmm. Which is really two different audiences. The person who's like, I want a good blender to do all sorts of things in my house is one kind of segment. And the segment that says, I'm a road warrior, I'm on the go, but I always want my nutritious shake because I'm all about health and fitness. That's a different segment, right? Mm-hmm. So when you do a comparison, your comparison should be clear about audience. Hey, folks, today I want to talk about blenders that are portable for road warriors, staying fit on the road. Let's get into it, right? Mm-hmm. If you just shape the audience, if someone else is looking at this going, oh, wait, I'm not that, then they can leave peacefully, but they can also not get into a fight with you when you say this is the better product. You're saying it's the better product in a context. Mm-hmm. So define the context, right?
Okay.
So the first thing is, you got to define your audience. The second thing is you got to go, okay, what's the intended goal here, right? The intended goal, what's the intended use of this product? So again, as I mentioned, if I'm talking about road warriors, then the goal is to be able to have something small that fits in your luggage, that is easy to wash, is what it, right? So what you're doing is you're defining, well, how would we define a winner? Right? In this category, in this space, in this post, what you're going to see. And so people again start going, ooh, yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. So, and you're just high level goal. I'm not talking about everything you care about, right? And then what you want to do is you want to get into, hey, here's my particular opinions or beef, right? Here's my particular perspective. So for example, I might say, heads up, I have limited this to those which are battery operated, right? I don't want to have to find an outlet. And the last thing I want to do is blend my shake in the bathroom where maybe I just went to the bathroom, right? Mm-hmm. That is not my idea of fun. So I have a particular bias or bent. I think it's wrong that I have to only do this where the outlet is and the outlets are in horrible places. Like, there's no way for me to even make a shake if the outlet is near the ground and it's wedged between the edge of the bed and the wall, right? Like, I got a foot and a half of space. That's not where I'm going to plug in my thing and try and do it. So I have the bias that says wireless and battery power. Just make sure you put it out front. If you have a bias, if you have a particular take. So when I sit down with a merchant and have this conversation, this is the framework I'm going through, right? And I'm saying, here's what you need to do, then here's what you need to do. Then I go, okay, now you want to show the options, right? So right. Now that we've done it, these are the two, and it turns out, you know, for this example, the Vitamix would not be in the list because the Vitamix is, you know, you gotta plug it in. But let's say we were talking about, you know, a couple other, you know, blenders. You'd pick these, maybe you pick these three, and you go, these are the three that are portable, they're small. Now let's get into it, right? So mm-hmm. You start time out. These are the options, and this is where you spend time on the attributes of the product, right? What's the size? What's the weight? What's the length? What volume or capacity does it, you know, can it, what size shake can it make? Right. Can it do it with ice? Can it do it without ice? Can it do what, how well does it blend ice? Right. Like, cause you can always put it in a, you know, your finished shake in a jar and just shake it up. It's powder and water. But if I want to put ice in it and I want that ice to get crushed or blent by the blender, I need to be upfront about it. Right. Like mm-hmm. I'm going to start, you know, I'm going to evaluate this on 3 to 5 stars based on how well it crushes ice and hotel ice. Right.
Right.
So you want to look at the options. At that point, you want to highlight, after that, you want to highlight prices, right? So I don't want price to be the main driver of a comparison. I want the utility to be the main driver of the comparison, but then I need to show price because it turns out that one of these blenders is $19 and one of these blenders is $79. And you're like, that's a pretty big difference. And it, you should be able to see so much value added at $79 that you go, yeah, this is worth it. If not, you're like, eh, these are pretty close and one's $50 cheaper. I'm just going to choose that.
Okay.
And lastly, you might, right, say, okay, here's my winner, right? Which, again, doesn't even have to be a sales pitch. So that was the original question, right?
Yeah.
Do I have to make the sale? I don't have to make the sales pitch as much as, hey, as you can see, right? Even though the, so if you go to Wirecutter, Wirecutter does a lot of comparisons all the time, right? This is their main model of driving revenue is that they write all the comparisons in the world and then they use affiliate links to take you to the winners, right? Mm. But they never define a single winner. They go, yeah, here's the winner. And then they go, and I love this. Their winner is almost never the actual best product. It's the best product for the price, which is a critical distinction. So what they can say is, hey, here's 5 blenders or 30 blenders or whatever it is, right? Here's 5 blenders and we picked the 4th, right? Going on a scale of 1 to 5 where 5 is the best and 1 is the worst. The 4th is our best product for the money you're going to spend. But then they say, after they've written up that one, they go, oh, if you want a little bit nicer, if you're willing to spend a little bit more, if you want that higher end product, here's number 5. But also, if you're on a super budget, here's number 3, right? So you end up having multiple winners, and you can do that unbiasedly without making a pitch and just say it's really for different audiences, right? Because audience will self-select. They will look at it and go, oh yeah, that's the best one. But wait, is there one better? And there's a certain group of people who are like, there's one better. I want that one. There's another group of people going, $29 for a blender that's portable that I only use 3 days a week. Is there one that's slightly cheaper? And you go, oh yeah, this one is, it doesn't have this one feature, but it's still pretty good at all these others. And it's $10 less. And you go, okay, I want that one, right? So you don't have to have a, here's the pitch. You just want to be, the trick to all this is being helpful, right?
Right.
If you're helpful to the most number of people, then you get to a place where you go, yeah, this is good. And people will like this and people will appreciate it, which will drive more and more traffic.
Right. Right. So that was a great discussion of the framework. I was wondering how like visuals and infographics kind of fit into the whole framework thing of the post. Yeah.
So I think, you know, people are visual. So, so having a, when you're comparing those products, whether you say, okay, when you get to the options, you might get to a place where you say, okay, so these are the 7 things that the criteria I'm using to compare. So you might even articulate the 7 before you talk about the options. You might say, okay, so these are the 7 criteria I'm using for portable blenders. And one of them is the length of the blender. And that's because it's got to fit in my luggage and it can't be blah, blah, blah. The other is the total volume it produces because I want a bigger shake in the morning, not something really small and Dixie cup-like.
Mm-hmm.
The 3rd is how well it does with ice. So it needs to be able to crush to that. The 4th is, does it need special batteries with a special charger or can I use everyday batteries, right? And so you start defining the criteria. And then in each one of the criteria, you're going to compare the products. that comparison on one feature could be its own visual depiction. You might create a visual item for that one feature, or you might create the larger infographic that compares them all so that other people can share it, right? And you can share it in their articles, like, oh, and by the way, this store just did a comparison of these five products and we want to share it with you, right? So you can create it on the per option basis. You can create it on the total. You can do it. You can create little, a visual kind of card for each product, right? Like, hey, these are the details of this product. So I go through all seven items and rate it on for this one product and then do another one for another, because someone else might want to share just one of those products out in the world, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, great. So what's the level of difficulty or time cost for you as a store builder?
So if I'm a store builder, the conversation with the merchants about this and walking them through a framework and helping them understand it is probably not more than a couple hours.
Okay.
But if I'm if I particularly as a store builder, if I'm more on the graphic design side, if I am a designer who works with a store and I'm more about the visuals, the cost might be much higher, right? Because they may hire you on a recurring basis to consistently create graphics, images, whatever, for those kind of posts. So it could be much higher. So it just kind of depends on the how involved you are with that merchant, right? Mm-hmm. Are you just explaining the framework and teaching them how to do it? Or are you actively part of the producing of the content, whether it's the text part or the visual?
Okay. And if you're not a text visual guy, are you kind of pitching your store owner to say, hey, go to Fiverr, go find a freelancer? Like, is that part of the conversation? Or
I find that most store builders will be in a good position if they have a writer that they can recommend or a designer they can recommend. It's just a lot nicer if you're consistently recommending someone. You know their work, you trust their work.
Okay.
But more importantly, you're creating a symbiotic relationship, right? Every store I build, I'm going to pass it on to one designer or one or two designers that can help. And every design that they're working on, when someone says, oh, you want to do this for a store? I have a store builder that I want to recommend to you, right? So that's a lot better than me just sending someone to Fiverr as a blank link and saying, good luck, and walking away, right?
Right. It's a lot more helpful. Yeah. Okay, that's great. Product research has to be a big piece of this. Do you have any tips on how to get good product research before you do the comparison post?
So, it's a great question. When I'm sitting with a merchant, right? So if I were talking to a store builder, I would tell you, you got to have the conversation with the merchant. When I sit with a merchant, more often than not, what I discover is that they are experts in that space, right? Mm-hmm. Like, especially if they're selling at a boutique store. It's not the case if they run a store that sells 200 different products in 200 different categories. They're not an expert in any of those categories. They're just, they're experts in something else. But if they're particular, if your merchant is a boutique where all they sell is handbags, all they sell is glasses, all they sell is watches, all they sell is wallets, whatever it is, t-shirts, jackets, they know something about that. And you go, okay, you already have this knowledge in-house. The problem is that no one's given you a framework to make that knowledge useful and be part of the funnel that brings traffic in. So I have a merchant friend of mine who runs a cigar lounge, and he knows a ridiculous amount about cigars. Like, so crazy, it's insane.
Mm-hmm.
But if you go to his website where they, sell stuff, and you look at his blog, the last article was written more than a year ago. You're like, this isn't a problem of knowledge, right? This isn't I could literally call up my buddy and ask him about comparing two products. Hey, these are two lightweight, good breakfast cigars, which, by the way, if you've never heard of a breakfast cigar, you're looking at me like,
yeah,
which is the way I felt the first time someone asked me, hey, what's your favorite breakfast cigar? And I'm like,
yeah,
you smoke a cigar at breakfast? But now that I know what a breakfast cigar is and have used several different cigars or smoked several different cigars at breakfast time.
Mm-hmm.
If I call my buddy up and I go, hey, if I was choosing between this one and this one, he could rattle off 30 minutes of content. Mm-hmm. Merchants often have the content. It's just no one gave them a framework. No one told them, you know what, that information is valuable. The moment I started talking with him and said, hey, here's what you ought to think about. He's like, oh, we could do that. We could do that a lot. And you're like, yeah, right. So yes, product research is critical. If you're talking to someone who doesn't have any information, any expertise in that space, that'll be hard and it'll take work and they likely have to hire someone. But a lot of boutique merchants, they know their stuff. It's just you got to give them a framework for saying, hey, listen, first, here's why comparison posts are really valuable, because people are doing the search on the products or on the product categories without talking to you. The other day I went looking for productivity journals, right? I'm doing a little research. I wanted to find the productivity journals. One of the easiest ways to do it was to first find one that was already spending money on Facebook ads. So I saw it in my list. I took the name, I went to Google and I said, here's the name, space VS or versus. And then I let Google tell me, right? And Google told me, here are all the comparison posts that are out there in the world. This is what people, this is the search query that people do. And so I go, oh, there's one. And I got six different names and I said, okay, buy all of them, ship them to my house. I wanna go and look at them all, right?
Yeah.
Google already knows that in a product category, people are comparing product A to B. So if you're a merchant who sells A or B or both, right? Creating that comparison content can get you found more and starts building that trust that you're a resource to help them make that decision. So store builders should have that conversation with merchants and say, let me walk you through this framework and let me help you get started on.
Okay, great. I like that you were talking just a couple minutes ago about, you know, before you really dig into the analysis, have your, you know, explain your criteria, explain your conditions. As we kind of wrap up here, what are some things that we should think about? What are some good criteria to consider when we're doing these comparisons?
So virtually every merchant, when you're having a conversation with a merchant about a particular product category, right? Whether it was, whether it was a blender or something else. It's all about intended use. So there's a context to intended use, and then there's the data about it. So, for example, let's say we were talking about smartwatches, right? Or fitness level watches that track your movements and everything else. You'll see I'm not wearing one right now, right? I'm not wearing one right now because when I am on daily calls on video all the time, my hands are moving. And if my hands are moving, most smartwatches will count that as steps. So even though I've been sitting in this chair for 5 hours, it'll say, congratulations, you just hit 2,000 steps. And you're like, no, I didn't. I haven't moved, right? But I have my smartwatch right next to me because when I get up and leave, right, I might swap it and say, I'm going to go for a walk. I'm going to do some stuff. And so I want to track that, right?
Okay.
So if the intended use for a smartwatch is fitness, which it may not be, you might use your watch so that when you sit at the keyboard, the computer automatically unlocks, et cetera. But if the intended use is fitness, then you want to use criteria for that intended use. What's battery life when you're moving a lot? What's where are the issues where it's accurate or not accurate, right? I have a buddy of mine who puts three smartwatches on his wrist and goes walking just to evaluate, right, which one works better. Or he says, well, it's different if you're walking versus you're on an elliptical, right? Your feet never make impact on an elliptical, right? Your legs are moving, but you're not stepping. And so some devices don't count you anything. Like, can you imagine working for 20 minutes on an elliptical and one of your watches says you did no steps? You'd be like,
yeah.
So that's all about intended use. You're using a smartwatch for fitness related stuff. Okay, what are the things that matter in that space? And when you're a store builder having that conversation with a merchant, if they know that stuff, right? If you know, the real trick is talking about the intended use, because once you get in that, they go, oh, well, you got to worry about this, right? Because they know that space. If you just broadly say, well, let's compare these products, right? And without intended use, it just ends up being, first of all, it's useless information. It doesn't motivate anyone to make any choice. It doesn't inspire any certain level of confidence and trust that the person who's writing this content is an expert. None of it. You get no benefit from that. But the moment you add intended use and drive to that, it'll change your criteria. It'll change the options. And it will put you in a very different place to be helpful.
Okay. Great. Chris, this was fantastic. Thank you so much.
Awesome. All right. Take care.
Thanks.
All right, folks, there you have it. That wraps up my conversation with Chris Lemma. He shared a ton of valuable insights and advice today on how to use comparison posts to share informative content with your customers. We also shared some tools and resources, which will all be linked up in the show notes. I hope you enjoyed our conversation. Please consider subscribing, sharing with a friend, or leaving us a review in your favorite podcast directory. Until next time, best of luck in all that you do, and we'll look forward to seeing you on the next episode of the Store Builders Podcast.